In central Illinois, especially, this community is very lucky that we still have providers standing after a two-year budget impasse and then all of the system changes which are wearing people out and importantly might be wearing out families and individuals. So we're, you know, starting to talk about change fatigue. Or is that what we talk about, change fatigue? Yeah. And then maybe own some of that ourselves. We made a lot of changes to our application system and our own rules last fall. The intent of all of those changes was to make things more straightforward and meaningful and maybe easier for everybody. They might not all accomplish that. So we'll have to, you know, listen for reactions from agencies about specific changes that we've made and maybe make more changes or see what happens. We do have a big old data project that we're still working on the edges of that to make the data more comparable, to find out what we can do with it. If we're spending a lot of time collecting information, we should make use of it. So those are the challenges that we've been dealing with in the office. And then I think we're also at a point where we have a brand new director of DD at the state level, but this is an interim director. That's Kathy Ward. So I don't know what the plan is for a new director. I don't know that this will reduce any of the chaos. And with the new governor and the transition team, I also don't know. I think in this community, we feel fortunate that our own independent service coordinator was selected to continue to provide those services in this region and a greater region. But there are other communities that are really scared now because they have a new provider that they don't know, and they don't know if this will be an additional stressor for families who have relationships with case coordinator or with their ISCs. So there's a lot to that still, and I think we still have an objection with the state for the way they rolled that funding process out, that it was too fast, it was not clear, and they didn't really do all the things they said they would do in the process of it. So while we're lucky, at the state level, we're still very concerned. So somehow we got to 44, but it might be in spite of factors like that. So anyway. One of the highlights from yesterday's meeting, remember, was that everyone is concerned now, including CMS, with the importance of framing some outcomes, meaningful outcomes, for people who take long-term services, so that those outcomes should be sensitive to changes across the lifespan, because that really is the nature of this work. Like, you know, we're funding agencies that serve teenagers, 30-year-olds, and retirees. And we really do need to somehow develop an outcome system that accounts for all of those life stages and what people are looking for. So I'm just glad that people are working on that and concerned, because we are too.
If I could ask a question just about that comment, what do they propose that they do? Are they looking at some type of large database? Because when you're talking about individuals from teenage, you know, through it, beginning at adulthood, through that whole adult lifespan, there's so many variables and so many individual. Yeah.
This is one of the top five challenges for DD across the country this year. And this is at the level of CMS. They're concerned now, so that's good. So long-term services are also for seniors, and so, you know, they don't have that particular challenge. Certainly things change for seniors too, but not so much as this entire lifespan set of services. So it's an additional concern for DD long-term services.
Okay, beginning on page 3, we have minutes from two meetings, our regular board meeting, which was November 14th, and then a joint study session with the MHB that occurred on November 28th. So I think that we probably need to entertain two motions. So I guess I will go ahead and move to approve the November 14th meeting minutes as presented. Second. Discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Okay, those minutes for the November 14th meeting are approved. And then I'll just go ahead and make a motion again to approve the meeting minutes for the joint study session on November 28th. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, those meeting minutes are also approved for the November 28th joint study session as presented. Beginning on page 9, we have financial information, claims report. I think two claims reports also, right? Just for our regular meeting. We didn't have a claims. No, we have two claims reports for December and January.
There might be three because they don't make it in the board packet unless we have them.
Looks like we have December and January. Okay. Would anybody like to entertain a motion?
I move approval of the both expenditure approval lists, or do we need to do them separately?
Do we need to do them separately? No. Okay. Second? Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the claims reports for December and January, December 2018, January 2019, are approved as presented. Under new business, we have a mid-year progress report from Katie Harmon at CCRPC. And I guess we'll also hear from next month, potentially from one or two additional providers. Welcome, Katie.
Okay, so can you hear me okay? Okay. Just kind of going to give an update on what we've been doing so far the first 6 months of our program called Decision Support Person-Centered Planning. My name's Katie Harmon. I'm a Community Services Program Manager with Regional Planning. And this is Angela Yost. So she's a case manager and independent service coordinator, and she's been working under the new component of our program expansion here in FY19. So just a couple things as a brief overview I'm going to give about our program as a whole, and then I'm mostly going to specifically touch on what we've been doing new this year. So as most of you know, we're currently one of 17 independent service coordination agencies in the state. Beginning next fiscal year, we will be one of 8. So there has been a reduction in the number of total ISC agencies from across the state. Lynn had mentioned, too, we were awarded the opportunity to serve the new Region H, which is a 13-county region, which encompasses Champaign County. This is just kind of primary purpose of all of our services related to intellectual and developmental disability to support independence, community inclusion, and self-determination. This is a lot of text right here, but I wanted you to have it for your reference. We have kind of three main target areas and populations that we're working with through this funded program. So first off, individuals who are registering on the PUNS list for the first time or completing their annual update, they have the opportunity to complete a preference assessment with us. So we're really just trying to gauge what services they're looking for, what sort of supports they might need. And we compile this information and then submit it to you all, the board, at the end of each fiscal year with our year-end report. And also, if they need some more support with additional case management, anything in the meantime, we're happy to provide that service as well. Our transition consultant services, which I reported on last year, which was new last year. So our transition consultants have been working with individuals who are kind of nearing graduation from high school, and so they've gone in and attended IEP meetings, helped develop a transition plan, and really kind of are trying to bridge that gap from when these students graduate to kind of adult DD services in the community. And then the new component this year is what we're doing. We are essentially providing person-centered planning and working with people who are registered on PUNS, who do not have Medicaid waiver funding, and are receiving services funded through CCDDB funds. So these are just a list of some of the services we've been providing up until kind of the last point here. This is what we've been doing the last several years, but we do a lot of outreach. You can see those on our quarterly reports. We provide linkage community services. We attend IEP meetings. I kind of mentioned some of this already. Really trying to develop a streamline of services from school to adult DD services. And then the new component, again, is conflict-free person-centered planning and case management to people on PUNS who are receiving CCDDB-funded services. Here's just a list of some of our outreach activities that we've been doing. So we provide education on our transition consultant services, connection with Champaign County high school professionals. I'm really proud of the work we've done this past year or so. We've really tried to get out in the schools more, particularly also targeting rural schools, to let them know about, one, PUNS and kind of the transition. We've been invited to several in-service meetings with special education directors and teachers to provide information about our services, so that's gone really well. And linkage to providers and services in the community that are available, and of course information about PUNS registration. There's been some changes with PUNS as well, so trying to get the message out about that. And here I'm really just focusing on, again, the new kind of part of our program and the expansion. We've been working specifically with DSC's Community First program to provide person-centered planning and case management services to clients enrolled in that particular program. So we're using the same tools developed through the state, the discovery tool, which I'll touch on a little bit more, and the personal plan. Development of outcomes, obviously, and really looking at what the person wants to be, what their goals are for the next year, what sort of services and supports they need, what they want their life to look like. And so we've been working really closely in collaboration with DSC, and in particular this program, to provide the services to clients enrolled in that program. So Angela also can provide case management support. So this is just some examples of things she can and has helped with. Obviously, linkage and referral to community resources, exploring living housing options, so she can help individuals registering on the statewide referral network, which is a kind of low-income housing available for people with disabilities. She can get them registered on that list, registering and applying for openings with Champaign County Housing Authority, assistance in applying for Medicaid, SSI, and other benefits that the person might be eligible for. And then, of course, if the situation would ever arise to a crisis that meets the state of Illinois' crisis criteria, it's a really nice and kind of easy streamline to provide a referral to our other ISCs working under our state funding to start that crisis process. Angela also previously worked as an independent service coordinator funded through the state with regional planning for several years, so she has a lot of familiarity with that program and was trained in the new process, so it's been a nice transition with her providing this support to DDB-funded folks. She also completes, for new clients coming into DSC's Community First program, the ICAP, which is an inventory for client and agency planning. Essentially, it's an assessment tool. It's pretty outdated. I can't remember who developed it and when, but I think it was like in the 80s or something, maybe even before that. But it is a required assessment once someone receives or is eligible to receive Medicaid waiver funding. That is something that's required that we send in with their new kind of referral packet. So she can get that done. She's been averaging around between 45 and 50 clients would be her caseload. She currently has 47 clients, and she's completed 22 personal plans with clients to date, and three are currently in progress. By the end of this fiscal year, she will have completed person-centered plans with all of the clients on her caseload. I'm sure I touched on this last year when I presented to this group, and I'm sure many of you know this and have heard this. I did feel like it was important to include again because this is really the basis of why we proposed to add this additional service to our program. We're really trying to mirror some of the federal Medicaid regulations and guidelines that have now filtered through the state of Illinois with a new person-centered process in 2017 and trying to, again, mirror that with DDB funding. So federal Medicaid guidelines states that, states are required to separate case management functions from service delivery functions, including the person-centered plan development, and that is why we proposed, in our application to have a staff person with regional planning as the independent service coordinator developing the plans. It gives a definition of what case management includes, and then conflict-free means that the case management must be performed by someone other than a relative of the person, someone other than a direct provider of service, someone who does not have a financial interest in a provider, or someone who is not employed by a provider. So that's kind of the overall rationale to this new process. And so those were federal Medicaid guidelines in 2014. Illinois was slow in implementing these guidelines, but did so in 2017. Yes, law. Thank you. You're absolutely right. So Illinois was several years behind in implementing, putting that into practice with the federal law. Thanks, Lynn. Just a quick note about the discovery process. So there's a set tool that we use that was developed by the state of Illinois with several different questions, really kind of gauging and learning more about the person, their preferences, interests, what kind of supports they might need, what kind of activities they're interested in. It's generally not a one-time information gathering. It can be very overwhelming to ask someone 50 questions in one sitting. That's just not realistic and not best practice. So this can occur over several different meetings. They can be face-to-face meetings, over the phone, reviewing previous plans and any of their assessments and records. The process always needs to begin with the person being served, and then we'll, of course, branch out to include the guardian, anyone else the person would like to be involved in that process, and then, of course, current providers. I did link, I think it's maybe it was about 3 months ago, or maybe it was a little bit longer, 3 to 6 months ago, the state of Illinois did finally release written guidelines for this process, so I included that link. I think they're helpful, and it kind of breaks down the process a little bit more. So we're glad that they did that. And then the development of the plan is really, it's developed from the discovery tool, but it's really a comprehensive vision for the person's life. So it's focusing on their strengths, preferences, needs, and desires. It is also used as a basis for receiving services, service monitoring, and quality evaluation. And then the implementation strategy is the part on the provider agency's end where they're essentially looking at the desired outcomes that the person wants to be working on over the last year and also the supports and services that they need and want and developing strategies and how they're going to help that person meet their goals and provide the services. So that's laid out in the provider's implementation strategy. I wanted to include some examples of outcomes or goals that the persons being served have identified that they'd like to work on over the last year. I think it's a good comprehensive, just examples how each person's
I just have one question related to what you just talked about. Of how many Champaign County residents were pulled from the PUNS list last June in 2018? And of those 15, do I understand correctly then that only two were eligible? So the 15 people that were pulled, though, are they all eligible, or is that not determined yet? Thank you, Katie and Angela. Okay, item B under new business is a briefing memorandum related to Senate Bill 3041. It begins on page 31. Included for information purposes only. Did you have anything you wanted to say about that, Lynn?
I think you should talk about it too, Kim. This was a piece of legislation early last year that attracted my attention because it allows existing DD boards to have some new authorities if they choose. Otherwise, it doesn't really change much for you. Other than filing the law in a different place, and it happens to be helpfully referenced many times in the property tax code, so it made me reread the property tax code with Kim sitting there, and we, this is a name change, makes you have to go back and look at the property tax code, and there I found a very helpful reminder of the autonomy of this fund, that the clerk can't reduce the extension on this levy they can't reduce that tax rate if you have said please don't reduce that tax rate. So it's an interesting, we are not in a situation like that. We're not being asked if, you know, the tax rate would be decreased. It's been going up and up, so I don't see the need for that. But it's interesting to just look at that and see in the property tax code the rights of this board are referenced in a way that I don't see very often. So otherwise, the gist of this law was to change the authority so that it's not just counties who can form DD boards, but also townships and municipalities. And that is important because there are communities that there are counties which have townships who very much want and need to do this, and they couldn't because neighboring townships were not able to. So we'll see some movement now. We should see an increase in DD boards. I think there are over 50 mental health boards and then 13 DD boards across the state, or maybe a few more. And they have, you know, they often have very small funds, but the other thing that they have that's maybe more important than how much money is they have local authority. So if there were more DD boards across the state contributing their local expertise to the state's decisions and as a legislative lobby, we might be able to move some things that matter, like what's wrong with the rates and the rules around DD, because there are specific things wrong, not just that they're low. So anyway, so I'm looking forward to seeing more communities establish DD boards and assert their authority as planners and as a legislative entity or lobby. So anyway, do you want to?
So the biggest change that I was going to share is that this now grants a board functioning under this act. With a majority vote, you can add to the definition of a person with a developmental disability. So historically, we follow the state's guideline, but with a majority vote, you guys can change that for Champaign County.
That would go through our funding guidelines, and it would populate other policy documents. So it's an interesting opportunity, and we have seen the state change its eligibility requirements in order to serve fewer people. And so if that happens again, this would be a very handy authority to exercise.
Okay, board discussion. Does anybody have a idea, question, concern to bring up? Successes and other agency information. Would anybody like to present?
Hi, I'm Becca from Community Choices. I just thought I would share a couple kind of exciting things that happened mostly in December. We've been working with an individual in our community transitional support program. We've been working with him on and off really for about 2 years, and really since I've been at the organization, his housing has been very tenuous. So he's lived, you know, on people's couches. He's, you know, lived with previous family members and you know, support people. In December, we'd been working with him to help find a job and kind of get some of the pieces in order for him to be able to afford housing and really be able to, you know, move out and have his own place. He'd been living in a hotel for a while. And in December, he was able to find an apartment that he can afford. We got him some furniture and a few other things. And so just before Christmas, he was able to move in. So that was really, really exciting. Sorry. So we are really glad and very much looking forward to sort of supporting him to make that sustainable. So that felt like a really exciting success for this individual. And he's really very happy and doing well so far. We also had two individuals find jobs in December, which was in my time. Usually people don't get hired in December because there's a million other things happening, and a lot of employers are not focusing their energy on hiring and carving out jobs for folks. So that was also a really kind of a nice thing to happen in a period when we don't necessarily see it most often. And then we're still working with the Urbana Park District. Last year was our first year doing sort of this collaboratively planned public event called Community Palooza, which is supposed to be a pun. We're hoping this year it actually is a pun with the two O's in the Palooza, where there's an all-inclusive event at the Urbana Indoor Aquatic Center that's planned and run by folks with disabilities. It's designed to be family-friendly, so inviting you know, young people and old people to sort of have games and activities at the pool. That's going to be in early April, so we're getting that planned for our second year, and we'll have information about it at the expo, which is going to be, I think, the week or 2 weeks beforehand. So we're looking forward to that. Any questions?
Hi, my name is Dylan Boot. I work in Pace. I just want to I happened to run across two of my former consumers from Unity High School down in the Fargo area, and at Pace, we have a kind of a rule that if we do see consumers out in public, we let them make the choice whether or not to say hi to us or not. But both of the students came up to me and were very happy to see me, and both stated that after they graduated high school, both of them found jobs in the community on their own, and they both stated that they got so much of the time that I had spent with them, and that they felt that it was because of what they learned from me that they were able to get those jobs. So it was not nice to hear that. And I thought that you guys should hear that too. So I hope you guys understood most of that or all that. But if you have questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Dylan.
Good morning. I'm Patty Walters from DSC. I had two kind of short stories that I wanted to share because while it's not necessarily the kind of successes that we typically bring forward in this with this board as far as people becoming more independent and getting their own apartments and things, there are a couple of what I would consider success stories based on some challenges that people have had and them having to kind of seek a different kind of service. So we've worked with ISC for one of them. There's a gentleman that previously lived in a three-person cella that we had that took a step backwards with some medical issues and was in the hospital and then in a nursing home. And at this point, progress is being made enough that we're able to start looking at bringing him back to day programs so that he can really kind of get back to some of the community things that he was doing and some of the day program activities and friends and people that he was familiar with. So it's not, quite the same success, but him being in a nursing home full time is not necessarily a good thing either. So we're excited about scheduling our RN, and the OT are going to do an assessment with him to see if we can't get him back to some of the community day services that he was accustomed to before this setback. And then another situation, we have a young woman that has just joined our Scylla program after trying several different community options that didn't work for her or her family. So she has a lot of family support and family resources, and tried living with another person with a disability, tried to live with someone that was going to support her part-time or live with her, and that arrangement didn't really work, and their family ended up being in kind of a crisis situation, and she now is living in Scylla for the first time, and it's been 2 weeks. So right now we're in a honeymoon stage and getting to know each other, but things are going really well, and you know, her life has changed quite a bit, and so has their families. And so I guess her being able to stay in her own home community and being able to get some supports at a time that residing with family and moving to a different location wasn't kind of forced to be an option. So I guess we typically are talking about things a little bit more independent than that, but I feel like those two stories were worthy of sharing, even though they're not either one DDB funded, although the gentleman that is when someone goes into the nursing home, they lose, you know, they lose any funding related to DD services. But if they have a DD diagnosis, the nursing home and the way that the state looks at that insists that they need to have access to DD services. So he is not somebody that needs to be in a nursing home 24/7. He needs to have some things available to him during the day, and we're happy to be able to take a look at that and see if that's not something that we can do. So just wanted to share both those stories. Thank you. Any questions?
Okay. Thanks, Patty. Moving on into old business. We have item A is that on page 38 to 48, we have the partial year 2019 first quarter service data. And the agency partial year 2019 quarter program reports are on pages 49 through 68, or pardon me, 66. Our meeting schedules, both for the CCDDB and the CCMHB, are on pages 67 through 70, and our handy-dandy list of acronyms, which is now 7 pages long, starts on page 71. Any comments?
I want to share one thing about your schedule.
So we have, for the rest of the spring, this room, but as we schedule meetings for the other half of the year, from July through December, we don't have the meetings set and we don't have a room. So there's a chance if we continue with the 8 o'clock in the morning pattern, which, you know, for now that looks right, but we may consider a different time. But to lock something down, I've made a request for 8 o'clock meetings for the fall, and it might take us back to the smaller space. So I was sort of getting attached to the smaller space, so for me that's fine. But anyway, just so you know, that's why you don't have the other half of the schedule yet. So we're still working on that.
Okay, the CCMHB, I believe, is meeting tonight. Any input or comments related to CCMHB?
This might be also, if Mark feels like talking about it, we have a pretty full agenda for them tonight, but they can't take any actions because we did not, the materials were not posted online within 48 hours. So we're going to still have the meeting, but no actions because no one here was able to look at the agenda or the board packet in advance. So we will move those action items to a special meeting on January 30th, which is when they also have a study session and they have some content that Mark has scheduled with similar to your presentation from Katie, it's new programs talking about their progress so far. So that's what they're working on. Some of the things that they are going to discuss tonight, Mark has spent a lot of time preparing the documents, so maybe he would share. There's one thing in there that if they are interested in pursuing, then I'll bring back to you all as an idea and for some action, and that is they are in a position, they are the borrower on the note that purchased the SILAs. The DD board doesn't have the authority to borrow money, but the mental health board does. Both boards can own properties. So they're in a position where they could pay off the note and save a little bit, because it's a low interest note, but they're not earning better interest by not purchasing. So if they choose to do that, then that's going to change some things about the intergovernmental agreement between the two boards in order to allow for half ownership to be the eventual outcome. And then if there's a sale, like I've been working with a new real estate attorney and with Chris and the auditor's office on all the possible implications. So it's very complicated to achieve one simple thing, which is purchase the SILAs. And then relatedly, I learned yesterday from Danielle Matthews, thank you for the information, I did forward it to our legislative liaison, that SILAs larger than ours, with, and we're not totally sure, will have some new requirements under the fire code. And when there's a fire requirement, those usually are expensive and have to be done quickly, even though the fire marshal might not get to you. So that's a capital project that I've forwarded to the state, because that is going to be true for SILAs all over the state, which are already sort of an endangered species. So why not ask the state to take care of that all at once through a capital project? It doesn't affect our SILAs. Okay. That was, and we'll have to keep an eye on it. Well, that's the... Well, I think it is defined. We just don't know. If it's four person and greater, right now we have three people in each of those group homes, but the plan was to get another one. So we may have that additional expense, but I think there's enough money in the fund that won't affect you. But it is an unexpected expense, the kind which, when we embarked on this process, surprised us and slowed us down in the purchase of more homes. It's only got three people in it right now. I think so. Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they've got four. I thought there were three and three, but maybe that's right, four and three. Okay, thank you. So we may have that expense, but that won't affect your agreements. That won't result in business for you to discuss in February. But if they do, if the mental health board is of a mind to pay off that note, there's a whole bunch of stuff we'll be looking at around getting that done. The other important stuff is what Mark's been doing for the mental health board.
I guess there's two things I guess I would mention. One is, and they both involve Rose grants. We have a long-standing program, Parenting with Love and Limits, that over the last couple of years has struggled to be adequately staffed, and then for those staff that were trained in the model to engage families at a level that justified, I guess, the significant investment by the board. Over the last 8 months, the program has experienced significant staff reduction, and Rose Grant has not been able to replace those staff, hire new staff that were qualified to run the model, to be trained and then run the model. Their last remaining therapist, trained in PLL, made a lateral move within the agency. So we're, and they have since notified us of that the program is essentially without any staff, and that they don't really believe that they'll be able to replace any of those positions. So we're going to the board with a motion to terminate their, mutually agreed, I guess, with Rose Grants to terminate the program. So there's that on a downside. On the upside, Rose Grants has just opened a new facility, their Moreland facility, And that includes moving their residential treatment services for substance use treatment to that location. It will include, they're planning to have as part of that some detox services specifically targeted to individuals that are entering the residential program. And then for those exiting the residential program, the location will also have what's referred to as a recovery home. And the Mental Health Board last June or last May awarded a contract to help support that. So we have, while we're terminating the contract for Parenting with Love and Limits, we have just issued the contract for the recovery home. So while we're losing one resource, we're gaining another, even though it's, you know, two very different populations that were served. But we're just experiencing some changes there. So.
They were also going to do elections of officers tonight, but they'll have a discussion of elections and then complete the elections on the 30th. So that's a cliffhanger.
There was, if I understand correctly, there was some talk that they were going to change their election timeline, but they're not going to do that. Okay, staff reports, including from Kim Bowdry, Stephanie Howard Gallo, and Chandra Somerville, are included for informational purposes beginning on page 79. All right, any board announcements?
You guys are so shy. There's been quite a bit of staff activity around the expo, which is March 30th. Come. Lots of people here are very involved with the expo, and it gets bigger every year, and we hope it's getting better every year. It was really, really nice last year. So everybody's got some role in that. And then there also has been some activity with those artists, the artists who support the Alliance for Inclusion and Respect. We have a new opportunity for them in a store. It's the Crossroads Corner Consignment. So starting February 1, they will have a booth that they'll share. Each artist will have a couple of weeks to sell their stuff in that store. And it's an experiment. So the owner of the store has really big ideas, and we hope that we can get to those, but we have to do the little thing first. And we hope that that will work. We're very encouraged by their experience at the indoor farmers market, well, the market in the square, which goes until April 27th. And the artists have been sharing a booth every Saturday. And we've heard really pretty good reports from them about that. So anyway, hopefully from that we see continued success in the indoor show. It's on Neil. Right. Do you know the El Toro that's on South Neil?
Yes.
It's right next to it.
Yeah.
So come see.
Do you believe then that we are adjourned? Thank you all.